This is Dr. Mike, and you're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. This is podcast 806.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
We have a special guest, one of my favorite people, and a favorite topic, what to feed your baby, a pediatrician's guide to the essential 11 essential foods, by Tanya Altman. As you can tell, we're early on in the podcast-only scheme of things. That is, we've always done a radio show for 16 years, or 15 years. We've done a radio show and podcasts. But since 49,000 people a week were downloading my podcast, Radio MD has decided to make it a podcast-only show. So you can get this podcast easily by going to iTunes and signing up for You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show podcast. After you hear them, rate them. Tell them how much you liked them or didn't. Please tell them you liked them, because that's the way that more people will get to know about You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show's podcast number 806. I should tweak and tell you who some of our guests are coming up as well. It's not just Tanya Altman this week, although she is a true star. But we have a great set of guests coming up over the next series of weeks, and I will tell you about those as we go along. The medical news of the week, oh, you want me to tell you now? Okay. The Power of When. Dr. Michael Bruce, one of the great sleep doctors of all time, he is going to talk to you about the power of when, discover your chronotype, and the best time to eat, to have lunch, to ask for a raise, to have sex, to write a novel, to take your medicines, the best time to try and go to sleep. And catching the right time is different from everyone. That'll be podcast 808. Podcast 809, Your Thyroid, with New York Times bestselling author Dr. Amy Myers, for her new book on the thyroid connection and why is thyroid disease used to be only women, now it's men and women. And of course, the end of this month, so podcast 807 is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, and we have cancer survivor Andrea Hertzberg. 20 years she survived, and she'll talk to us about what she's done to help her survival. And today, of course, it is What to Feed Your Baby, the 11 Essential Foods by Dr. Tanya Altman, A-L-T-M-A-N-N. The book is available on Amazon, as well as she's one of my friends on the ShareCare.com website answering your questions. But let's start with the news of the week, and I like the news this week. The first one is we're going to talk a lot about food this week, so I thought I'd go about two subjects that are very different, because one, we have a lot of data to support, and the other, we have no data to support. The lot of data, regular nibbling on nuts is linked to low inflammation. That's right. This is a large study. In fact, it's several studies. This is both a nurse's health study and the health professionals follow-up study. They looked at those people who ate nuts five or more times a week, compared those to the people who didn't. And the people who ate nuts had about a 20%. Didn't even matter whether they were peanuts, a legume, or real nuts. Didn't matter which nut they had. But they had about a 20% lower levels of inflammation markers in their blood, showing that nuts decrease inflammation. Why is that? Well, they don't answer that question there. And, of course, walnuts are my favorite, and I like them roasted. And you say, is roasting a healthy way to have nuts? And the answer is, if you use low-temperature roasting, that is 275 degrees or less, I put them in a toaster oven for 9 to 12 minutes, brings out their woody, wonderful taste of walnuts. I love it. Dr. Oz, of course, he and I differ in that. I like to roast my nuts, but he likes to soak his nuts. So soaking his nuts in water, he soaks the walnuts in water, I roast them. But we both enjoy an ounce of nuts a day, and this data shows that that's another benefit of having nuts. By the way, one of the other benefits in the large Chilean study, they decreased reinfarction, that is heart attacks, by 60+% just having an ounce of nuts a day. In the PREDIMED study in Spain, having an ounce and a half a day decreased all-cause mortality by about 30%. So huge benefits from having nuts, and roasting is a good way to use low temperature. What about, since we're on roasting, is roasting a healthy way to cook vegetables? And the answer is yes, as long as you roast at a low temperature. So same answer for nuts and for vegetables. Cook them at a low enough temperature, and because intense heat can alter both the fats in the nuts and the quality of the vegetables. So low temperature is key. What's the subject that I was going to talk about on this podcast that has no data at all? That's edible sunscreens. Yeah, edible sunscreens are all the rage. People gobble these up at spas, and then they go under sunlights and expect not to get a sunburn or expect not to get cancer 30 or 40 years later. And they eat the orange-flavored beverages or the drinkable sunscreen or even a pill. Is there data that says this works? And the answer is nope. Now, some people swear by it. So you can get some anecdotal stories, that is one stories. People will say, heck, I took this and then I was out in the sun all day and I didn't get burned. How good is that data? Not very. And in fact, all of the data looking at it shows edible sunscreens may be selling off the spa shelves, but they aren't doing you any good. What's the best sunscreen that we know of? There is a best, and that's micronized zinc oxide. Why is that so good? Because you want to protect against both UVA and UVB, so you want a physical sunscreen. Why do I specify micronized zinc oxide? Because it isn't gunky. It doesn't show that white stuff. You just put it on. It has some oil with it. You put it on, and you need about a shot glass of any sunscreen. That is an ounce of any sunscreen to get enough on for your day, and make sure you get it on your neck as well as your face. And since the sun is still out, make sure you get it. So oral sunscreen, all the rage. Now I'm going to lead into that talk we have with a couple more subjects that I like to talk about, one of which is living near a fracking site and are there complications. Well, this was a study done by the Environmental Health Perspectives, and it ranked participants in 7,785 people. They asked, do they have sinusitis, do they have fatigue, do they have migraines, or do they have all three? And why did they do this? Because there were people coming into the urgent care and emergency room with headaches, with severe fatigue, with sinusitis. And what they found is that there was about a doubling of the risk of sinusitis, fatigue, and migraines, all three, if you lived near a fracking site. How close is near? I can't find it out from my notes. I'm sorry, I usually have that type of information in my notes, but I think it was within a mile of a fracking site. What does that mean you should do? It means don't live within a mile of a fracking site. I will come back next week with the exact data of what I mean by how close. So I don't mean to tease you. This is podcast 806, but on podcast 807, I will find out the distance that that is to the fracking site. So I'm going to put that as some of my homework for next week. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with What to Feed Your Baby author, The Pediatrician's Guide to 11 Essential Foods to Guarantee Veggie-Loving, No-Fuss, Healthy Eating Kids by Tanya, T-A-N-Y-A, Altman, A-L-T-M-A-N. She's a physician, and this book is in the Harper One series. So it's a stable book that you can get on Amazon.com. And she is a real superstar pediatrician, as well as this is a very, very readable book. We'll talk to her about the 11 essential foods and why they are essential. I want to go to two more eating subjects, if you will, and I realize this podcast 806 is a lot on food. Hope you enjoy food like I do, but this is the Odd Omega segment. Celiac disease prevalence is steady. That is, roughly 1 in 140 people have celiac disease or true gluten intolerance. That is, they get sick when they have gluten. But the amount of people, if you will, eating gluten-free diets has more than doubled. So overall, roughly 0.7% of individuals have celiac disease or gluten intolerance, and now four times that, or roughly 3.2% of people are going gluten-free. That's up from 0.52% in 2009, 0.99% in 2011, 1.7% in 2013. In 2015, it's now almost double that, 3.2%. So we've really gone from a little to a lot of people say they're going gluten-free. I have two other subjects on the food story. Is granola really a dessert? Well, how did granola start? It turns out that in 1863, a Dr. James Caleb Jackson, who was a staunch nutrition advocate, created the world's first recipe for what would become granola. The dish, he called it granola, consisted of dense, unsweetened bran nuggets soaked in milk. Now, that evolved when a Dr. Kellogg, yes, it's one of, that's a relative of the founder of Kellogg's Food and Kellogg's Cereals, of course, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, who was another health reformer who owned a rival sanitarium in Michigan. He really borrowed, or as some would say, stole Dr. Jackson's recipe. So Dr. Jackson sued, and Dr. Granola changed the name of his cereal to Granola, which he and his brother, Will Keith Kellogg, experimented with, leading to the creation of Corn Flakes. But Dr. Kellogg, that's Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, wanted to keep his cereal sugar-free. He was a Seventh-day Adventist who famously advocated against alcohol, meat, sugar, tobacco, even sexual activity. Well, most of those you should ban. But anyway, his brother, Will, insisted on sweetening them. The two parted ways. Will went on to launch the Kellogg Company and its popular sweet cereals, which include Fruit Loops and Cocoa Krispies. Are horrible. But, in fact, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg kept the original granola, which is really a health food, which is really a lot of rolled oats, one cup of wheat germ, and very little sugar or honey or anything else. That's where granola is, in truth. But in fact, most granolas sold commercially are just sugar, a delivery vehicle for sugar. Don't have them, because they're really a horrible aging dessert, one that will age you. And I hope that we now have Dr. Tanya Altman, T-A-N-Y-A Altman, that great pediatrician who wrote the book, What to Feed Your Baby, A Pediatrician's Guide to the 11 Essential Foods to Guarantee Veggie-Loving, No-Fuss, Healthy Eating Kids. Tanya, are you here?
I'm here, Dr. Roizen. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. And the book is, of course, available on Amazon. But tell us, why did you call them essential foods?
That's a great question. You know, I've been a pediatrician for 15 years now. And after working with kids and seeing picky eaters and kids that were great eaters and kids that might be overweight and underweight and kids that tend to get sick more and kids that are really healthy, I sort of figured out that these are kind of what I call the 11 essential foundation foods. And if you give your kids these foods regularly, they're sort of gateway foods to other healthy foods, and it will help train their taste buds early on, as well as providing them all the nutrients and nutrition they need to grow into healthy, strong children. So these are just sort of the groups that I came up with. And for instance, green veggies. It's not that other colored veggies aren't also good for you, but when you get babies used to eating green vegetables early, then they're going to grow into children that love to eat all types of vegetables.
And tell me about So do they provide an essential nutrient, or they're essential? The word essential is what I'm after. Are they essential nutrients, or are they essential in the way of getting your child to eat healthy for the rest of their life?
You know, it's a little of both. So each of these foods do provide essential nutrients that kids need. Now, that's not to say that you can't go without one. For instance, you know, chicken and legumes is on my list. If you're a vegetarian or vegan family, that's okay. We can still figure out ways to give your kids the essential nutrients they need. It's just going to be a little more challenging. You're going to give lentils and beans on a regular basis. But fish, avocados, prunes, eggs, dairy, all of my 11 essential foods, they do each provide nutrients that kids need starting around 6 months of age. And honestly, these are nutrients that adults need as well. I have many dads read my book and say, oh, wow, these are the 11 things that I really should be eating every day. And so it exposes your kids to the nutrition they need, but it also creates healthy habits so that way they can grow into older children and adults who really like to eat good, nutritious foundation foods.
Now, one of the things we do on the podcast is we get some questions in. If you want to ask a question to Dr. Tanya Altman, even if you want to do it in the future, and I know this is pre-recorded today, but that's why I announce what's going to be on for future podcasts. But if you want to ask Dr. Altman, we'll get her on again, and she will talk to us about, and I know one of the questions we got already is, what vitamins do my kids eat? So we'll get to that. But let's talk to her today about some of these 11 essentials. And one of them you put as is prunes. Tell us why prunes are an essential food for kids.
Sure. So prunes themselves are packed with tons of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, but most importantly, they can help prevent and treat constipation. And when you start babies on solid food around 6 months of age, many of them get a little constipated. And so I often have parents give some baby food prunes, pureed prunes. And when you get the babies used to eating prunes when they're little, then when they're toddlers and they're potty training and they're holding on to their poop because they don't want to go in the potty, it's really easy to treat the constipation. Too many parents today rely on over-the-counter medications. The kids come in with tummy aches in elementary school because they're not getting enough fiber in their diet. And if you get kids used to eating prunes when they're little and you give it to them regularly, it can prevent so many tummy aches later on, so many problems, and it's so natural and healthy and really easy to help your kids as they get older. For instance, my boys might come home from a birthday party where they ate a little too much junk food, or they might come home from school one day and say, Mom, you know what? I didn't go today. My tummy hurts. I think I need a few prunes. I give them the prunes, and they're good. And if you don't get your kids used to eating prunes when they're young, then it becomes more of a battle. Ew, I don't like prunes. No, I don't want that. And then you have to turn to other medications when there's so many natural, healthy ways to get the fiber that your kids need and help soften the stools to prevent and cure tummy aches.
And now let's go and talk a little bit about if you will, this is another one of those foods, and it is nuts and nut butters. And we just talked about nuts and how, if you will, getting a ounce of nuts a day for us adults is good at decreasing inflammation in the health professionals and nurses' health study. But tell us about nuts for kids. And I thought kids got allergies with nuts.
And you know what? That's what we used to think. Years ago, pediatricians and allergists and other doctors said, don't give your child nuts until they're 2 or 3 or older, because we thought that if you introduced it too early, they would develop a nut allergy. Well, we now know through really good data and research that that is not true. And there was a study, the LEAP study, came out over a year ago, and that really showed us that early introduction of peanut protein can actually decrease the chance that your children will become allergic to peanuts. And we feel that this is probably the case with the other 8 allergic type foods, even though we don't have the data there yet. So the new guidelines say introduce everything early in a form your child can handle, but especially nuts and nut butter. So nuts can be a choking hazard, so you do have to be careful with whole nuts. But what I like to do around 6 months of age is start melting some creamy peanut butter or almond butter into your child's oatmeal. Let them lick a little bit off your finger. Use it when you're making smoothies. I mean, we know that it's a really healthy source of fat and protein, so especially for vegetarian families. You know, often if you're not eating meat, it might be hard for your child to get enough vegetarian protein and healthy fat, and so we'll push a lot of nuts and nut butter. If they're easy to carry around for snacks, peanut butter sandwiches can sit in a bag all day at school or in mom's purse. So it's really easy when I'm out and about with my kids. You don't have to drive through, you know, fast food. Just plan ahead and pack some nut butter sandwiches on whole grain bread, a bag of nuts for older kids. But we know that the more frequently that you feed the babies the nut products, so I usually recommend 3 times a week, starting around 6 months of age, just like the LEAP study, we know you can dramatically decrease the chance that your child will develop an allergy to nuts.
Now, one of the questions we got asked is, are vitamins, multivitamins, needed for kids, and what about vitamin C, D, E, and then someone asked about DHA, which is an essential omega-3, and someone asked about lutein and zeaxanthin for eyes. Is there any need for these in kids in general?
And that's a great question. So the best way to get your vitamins is through food. So fish is a great natural source of vitamin D and healthy omega-3 fatty acids, which are great for brain and eye development. And that's why I usually recommend that moms feed a little bit of wild salmon, organic wild salmon, around 6 months of age and get kids used to the taste of fish. Dairy products are a great source of vitamin D. Vegetables and berries and citrus fruit are loaded with vitamin C and other antioxidants. So giving your children a healthy diet full of fresh fruits and vegetables and lean protein and dairy products are really the best way to provide all these vitamins. But in some cases, they may need to be supplemented. And you should really, you know, talk to your child's pediatrician about this. For example, vitamin D is pretty much universally recommended now to be supplemented at all ages, especially if you're not drinking a lot of milk. Milk is really the best form of vitamin D for kids.
Is there any reason to, in other words, we give these vitamin drops, I've seen them given, is there any reason to use, for example, they contain, I think they contain C, D, and E. Is there any reason, I guess that's the genesis of this question, is someone who had received or was given those vitamin drops, is there any reason to use those?
Well, vitamin D is universally recommended now starting soon after birth for all babies because it's hard to get enough vitamin D from breast milk alone, and vitamin D is so important for bone development, for your immune system, for preventing cancer later on in life. And in some ways, the easiest way to get vitamin D into kids is often when you combine it with other vitamins or even a chewable multivitamin as they get older. So as part of the vitamin D delivery system, that's often why the recommendation comes to give children and babies other vitamin drops and chewable vitamins and gummy vitamins. So So if you feel that your child may not be getting enough of what they need through diet, or you do want to supplement, then those are all great ways. I try to get my kids to take vitamin D every day. You know, during the winter, I like vitamin C too, but does it help prevent colds? Well, the data's sort of mixed, but I feel like it can't hurt. And we do eat plenty of berries and citrus fruits anyway, but I'm always pushing the vitamin C on my kids. In terms of omega-3 fatty acids, if you're not a family that eats a lot of fish, you know, I think there can be some benefit. There's a lot of different types out there. So which is best? You know, it's hard to say. I usually tell parents the best type of vitamin is the one that your child likes to take every day. Because if it sits up on the counter in your kitchen, or they're refusing to take it, or they spit it back out at you, it's not going to help anyone.
And any reason for this other question, which is lutein and zeaxanthin? They say, I was told by my doc I should have been taking this all my life to prevent macular degeneration. Should that start with my kids, and at what age?
So, you know, that's a good question, and that's a new area of research right now. They have added lutein and zeaxanthin to some of the infant formulas. As far as I know, the research is really only there for premature babies and that it can help them with eye development. However, you know, as you get older, there are older doctors now that are recommending the lutein and zeaxanthin supplements for adults to prevent macular degeneration. Will it help if you start your kids on that? I don't know that we have the data. Again, you know, eating a diet full of fresh fruits and vegetables to get those naturally is probably the best thing to do. But if you have a strong family history of bad eyes, of macular degeneration, you know, ask your ophthalmologist. I've talked to a lot of ophthalmologists, you know, should I be taking this? And a lot of them say, yeah, go ahead. You know, it can't hurt. But then again, how many vitamins and supplements can you take every day? So sometimes you have to sort of pick and choose. So, you know, I would say ask your eye doctor. It's not exactly my field. I think it couldn't hurt, but I think it's also hard to get that type of supplement into a child because they're mostly pills and tablets that kids can't swallow yet.
And now let's go to one more. I think we have time for one more of these choices. It is, I guess the most interesting one on here is water.
Water. So I believe that water is the healthiest thing that anybody can drink at any age. So starting around 6 months of age, when babies start solids, I start having the parents give them little sips of plain water. No juice, just plain water. And how many adults do you know that don't like the taste of plain water? It's because they didn't grow up drinking it. So when you give infants plain water to drink, they grow into toddlers who like plain water, and school-age kids who drink water, and adults who drink water. And I really prefer to avoid juice because, one, there isn't much nutrition, and it just primes their brain to wanting to taste sweet beverages for the rest of their life. So if you can get everybody to grow up drinking plain water, it's so healthy at all ages. We could all probably use an extra glass of plain water a day in our diet.
Tanya Altman, the book is What to Feed Your Baby, A Pediatrician's Guide to 11 Essential Foods, a great book. It will guarantee veggie-loving, no-fuss, healthy-eating kids. Tanya Altman, What to Feed Your Baby, Altmann. It's available on Amazon. Tanya, thank you very, very much for taking the time to help all of us learn more about kids' nutrition. Maybe I should start eating prunes myself.
I think you should. And thank you so much, Dr. Roizen, for having me on. Prunes taste great. I actually try to eat a few every day, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Look forward to it, and hope you will get this. And it's a great gift to give your friends when they're having a baby, What to Feed Your Baby. I know I gave one as a gift to my son and daughter-in-law, who now have a almost six-month-old child. So that's our podcast, 806. I'm going to review the highlights of the news of the week in just a second. But just to tell you, podcast 807, Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, will be with 20-year cancer survivor Andrea Hertzberg, whose book is, I don't know the name of the book or if she has a book, but she's going to talk about cancer survivorship. Podcast 808 is The Power of When, discover your chronotrope and the best time to eat lunch, ask for a raise, have sex, write a novel, take your meds, and more with Dr. Michael Bruce. Podcast 809, Your Thyroid. Those are the guests. And as usual, we will have the news, the top news of the week, to start off each show. Over the last two podcasts, we've talked about the 50% increase in marijuana use in the last decade. Is that a good thing or not? Take it to heart. Why pollen and allergies are essential to keep out of the house. Wash your face and hands. Take your shoes off as you get in. Don't sleep with your pets, especially in this time, and why it's going to be especially a bad year. It was warm this year. Rethinking hormones to ease menopause. Say yes if you say it with aspirin as well. That's for both men and women. If you're taking testosterone or estrogen or progestin, make sure you talk to your doc about whether you should be taking two baby aspirin with half a glass of warm water before or afterwards. Yes is the likely answer. The question is, your granola really a dessert? Don't wait until you're old to stay young, and we get happier as we get old because we learn to have a purpose and to manage stress successfully. And edible sunscreens is the wellness foreplay story. They're really a rage, but there's no proof they work. And the odd omegas, celiac prevalence is steady, but gluten-free, a fourfold increase in the last decade. Thanks very much for listening. This is Dr. Mike Roizen saying we'll be back every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. with a new podcast with the latest news of the week and a great guest for you to enjoy. Write me at udocs, Y-O-U-D-O-C-S, at gmail.com if you've got questions for those authors or just want a topic or an author to appear on the show. Podcast, 7 a.m. every Tuesday morning. Thanks for listening.